From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of August, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net. NDSU Extension Agricultural Economist North Dakota's Efrain Olson will be here to take a broader perspective of what's happening in the world marketplace. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mark Russo at Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day at $6.08, finished a penny and three quarters lower. December at $6.07, down 2.75. In the March, 2.75 lower, settled at $6.15. The November beans at $14 even, down 8.75. January down 9.25 at $14.07. And bean meal was down $1.10. Bean oil up 35 cents. Wheat futures were four higher for the soft red at $7.79. And the September contract, the hard red SEP, down a half at $8.47. Live cattle futures at $144.22 were 35 cents higher. Feeders were up $2.22, and lean hogs were $1.90 higher. Crude oil down, rather up $1.10 at $90.11. And the wholesale price of gasoline, a penny and 6 cents higher, $2.87.3. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at agmarket.net to discuss what happened in Chicago. Ukrainian ships have left the port. They've actually arrived at port. And one ship with corn didn't get to unload because they said, yeah, no, it's 5 months late. What's happening there in the Black Sea and with these deliveries?
Well, yeah, we're finally starting to see some vessels move out of that region. And, the count, there's a the count's pretty high to move out, so we'll see how those move out and see what the quality is and see if they make the destination, like you said, in good quality and in a timely fashion. I'm sure the trade's eager to get that out, but there was one brave vessel that was going into the mess there, so those guys must have got triple pay or quadruple paid to take on a little bit of risk going in there to try to pick up some grain to move it out. But that was kind of a overhead barrier, but I think the weekend weather event, a lot of conversation of the Dakotas, northern Iowa, Minnesota received some beneficial rain, so hopefully the crops in that window here to improve on some moisture. I know the beans more so, and of course the corn, we're starting to see some stories that made me a little tip back, or some pollination issues, according to whether it was early or late planted. And it was pretty warm there in the beginning of the growing season, so that kind of could play havoc with the ear size and so forth. But we did see one local tour, Central Illinois here, that projected corn yield 209.7 bushels per acre. Last year's 207.3, the year before 207.6, and it's the highest yield. So there are some spots in here that's going to have some fairly good yield potential. If we can finish off in through here, but there's some areas that's kind of been shortchanged, and how you average that out, that's going to be the challenge of the marketplace here to come up with a nationwide number that the trade's comfortable with, which nobody will be comfortable with until we get into next spring on it. As far as talking about the condition of the crop, we're seeing a situation where this afternoon's crop conditions as a nation's expected to be down 1% for corn and beans both, Todd.
When you look forward to the end of the week, USDA will release the first crop production report of the year. We'll have some updated numbers related to acreage out of North Dakota and some other places. I'm wondering if that's going to make much of a difference and what your expectations or the trade's expectations might be for yield this time around.
Yeah, that's a great point there, the acreage and more so harvested acreage than anything, because there's talking about resurveying or trying to get a handle what was actually planted. And, of course, that northwest will be the area to keep an eye on. Also, too, when you talk about harvested acreage, how much is going to be chopped for silage, just due to the fact that, you know, the producer or whatever saw very little potential to let go on through there. So, but no, this report, hopefully we'll have a little better idea on acreage. When you take the acreage, you take 1 million acres times the yield, that's going to give your bottom line moving that much. When you take the yield times the total harvest acres, that moves the bottom line a lot more. So this all adds up. But two, the other thing is the trade is so daggone negative on the export side of the equation. The shipments this morning were a little bit light, and we're finishing up the marking year real quick, September 1st. So hopefully those ships are not going into the Black Sea region. Hopefully those ships are going into the Gulf and on the Pacific Northwest trying to ship some of the grain out that we sold here, Todd.
Anything else that we ought to be following this week beyond the end of the week USDA numbers?
Well, I think weather's going to be the dominant factor. Weather's a lot more newsworthy. It's a lot more jittery to the marketplace. But two, take a look at the technical picture here. If you look at the charts, we've had a fairly large drop since that June, July high there. We've virtually been straight down. Now we're sort of consolidating sideways here. We're forming some pennants or some wedges on the charts there. So we'll see what direction we pop out. But one thing to remember, oftentimes the grain market has a little lower move until end of August. And after we get into first crop new marketing year, then it has a whole different attitude.
I made note, November soybeans posted an outside month up in July. Of course, the lead option can be far more important in the matters. How do you see them?
Well, the thing is, technically, that's kind of positive. If you go below that low, then it becomes negative. You know, whenever you get outside ups, bearish, outside downs, you know, it can be negative. But two, we're transitioning from the old crop to the new crop. So once we get this old crop virtually off, we're going to have probably a pretty good price differential where the July went off and where the actual November is. We got August, September to fill in through there. But that lead chart, you got to remember, we're losing the carry in the marketplace on the old crop.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can search it out if you'd like in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple and Google, Spotify, as well as Amazon Music, even Audible, if you want, and you're already subscribed, I'll bet you can get your Alexa or Google Home to play it as well, just by asking for the Closing Market Report. There's just one news item for the day, and this will bring to you from the National Corn Growers Association, or NCGA, perspective. It sent a press release this morning that said the Senate on Sunday, of course, voted along party lines, passing the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. The bill, which includes domestic energy incentives and other provisions aimed at reducing carbon emissions, would provide significant investments for agriculture, writes NCGA, including over $20 billion in funding to support farmers' implementation and expansion of voluntary on-farm conservation practices, and $500 million to provide greater market access for higher blends of biofuels. The $19.9 billion in funding for U.S. Department of Agriculture conservation programs include the following program allocations, along with $1 billion for additional conservation technical assistance, $8.45 billion for the Environmental Quality or EQIP program, $6.75 billion for the Regional Conservation Partnership program, $3.25 billion for the Conservation Stewardship program, and $1.4 billion for the Agricultural Conservation Easement Program. To advance biofuels, the legislation includes $500 million for infrastructure for greater market deployment of higher blends of biofuels and new tax credits based on carbon reduction to incentivize clean fuels, such as biofuels like ethanol and new sustainable aviation fuel. NCGA notes it worked closely with allies of farmers and rural communities to ensure the legislation did not change tax provisions that would directly affect family farmers. The House of Representatives is expected to vote on the legislation in the coming days. joined by Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University. He's an NDSU Extension agricultural economist. Hi, Frayne. Thanks for being with us. What's the crop look like in North Dakota? Have you seen much of it?
Yeah, I've had, over the last couple of weeks, I've had a chance to drive a good portion of the state. We also had the Wheat Quality Council tour for spring wheat come through. And in general, the crop looks really, really good. We did have some prevent plant. We're going to wait until this August reports now from FSA to get an idea of what the exact prevent plant numbers are. But the crop that did get seeded looks very, very good. Looks actually amazingly good if it was the middle of July. Our problem is because it was planted so late, we are anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks behind in crop development for a lot of the crops that I have seen. So if this was the middle of July, I'd be just jumping up and down and we'd say we're going to have a bin buster. Our key to success now, because everything was planted so late, it's great condition right now. Crop condition ratings are looking very good. The challenge we're going to have, we need to have a really good September. Up in this northern growing region, we tend to have a pretty short growing season, but we have the long days to help compensate. So we have a lot of sunshine during the growing season. But we do need the heat units. And our September is kind of that tipping point. If we have a nice, warm, average or above average temperatures, which is the current long-term forecast from National Weather Service, this could be a fantastic crop. Now, on the flip side, if this turns into a cool, kind of cloudy, drizzly kind of fall, and we've had a few of those as well, then we're going to be in serious trouble. Then there's going to be the concern will be obviously an early frost, which will not only have some impacts on soybeans and soybean yield, but obviously on corn as well. Historically, when we have those kinds of falls, we're going to get low test weight grain. We're going to have to spend a lot of money on drying. There's going to be some issues. So right now, crossing our fingers, looking at what we see in the field today, I think most farmers are pretty optimistic. But we will have to have a really nice September to finish the crop off.
Let's talk a little bit about demand for both corn and soybeans. In particular, demand from your area, I think feedlots for corn, ethanol as well. Are you concerned about either of those?
We don't have a huge feeding industry up in this part of the world. We do have a pretty large livestock sector, but a lot of that's cow calf operations. There is some backgrounding that goes on from the cattle standpoint, but we really don't have a big density of hog feeding or cattle finishing. Our dairy industry is also pretty thin. So a lot of our product right now ends up going on a train to get into an animal's mouth. Now, we do have a pretty diverse processing sector. We do have several very large ethanol plants that chew up a lot of our corn. We also have a corn wet milling plant that makes corn sweetener. So we do have a pretty, at least in the eastern portion of the state, a pretty decent local demand base for it. We are right now a bit thin. Basis levels, we're actually at a positive basis at certain locations. We have been for about a month or so, which is very unusual for us on the corn side. But it just shows essentially how tight the old crop corn supplies are. So I know there's a lot of the processors that are really looking forward to the, hopefully, knock on wood again, a good new crop season to be able to refill those inventories and get the bins filled up.
And for soybeans, of course, it's about the export market going to China. How much of the North Dakota crop goes out the West Coast?
There's, based on historical numbers, about 70% of our soybeans grown in the state head out to the PNW for export. About 95% of that goes to China directly. So we're exceptionally tied to the Chinese demand base. We are starting to see some announcements of some new crop purchases by China of U.S. soy. Some of that will come through the PNW. Some of it will obviously go through the Gulf. A lot of it depends upon delivery period and kind of logistics and how that's going to work. But it's really nice to see that appetite coming back. I know that the Brazilian crop was a little bit shorter than I think people had originally expected, but it was still not a horrible crop. And I guess looking forward, one of the concerns longer term that I have over the next several months, I've seen some private estimates come out of what the Brazilian soybean crop will be for this upcoming year, the 22-23 crop. And the some of the private analysts are projecting some exceptionally large numbers for that soybean crop coming up. And that has a concern longer term. Shorter term, I think it'll give us some opportunity to be able to backfill until that crop is harvested.
So backfill until late March, early April.
Yep. When I have a research colleague, Dr. Bill Wilson, that's done extensive study on analysis of soybean movements and soybean basis levels historically in this region. You know, what he's recommending, and I agree with him completely, is that, you know, if you're a soybean farmer up in these northern plains, you better get your grain marketed and sold by about the end of February, because by the time you hit March, our basis levels start to drop off fairly quickly. The grain movement out of the PNW starts to drop off very quickly as the Chinese start moving their business into that South American crop. And so we really have a window of probably December, Jan, and Feb to be able to get most of our soybean moved into the export market. And beyond that, we're going to be fighting very, head to head with the Brazilian crop.
How's the development of the renewable diesel industry in North Dakota coming along?
Yeah, so we are getting one of the exciting news, of course, we've getting a formal announcement of several different crushing plants that are going to be built in the region. The one that is getting the most interest, of course, is the ADM facility, which is just west of Fargo here, about 100 miles or thereabouts. And there's an agreement, supply agreement between ADM and Marathon Oil for the use of their soybean oil for renewable diesel. There's a small refining plant in western North Dakota that Marathon owns, has been converted to making renewable diesel only. It was originally designed to take the Bakken crude oil and turn it into diesel fuel, but they've retrofitted it now, and they're turning out renewable diesel primarily for the California market. That plant became fully operational at 100% capacity last August, so it's been running full-time since then, obviously having to procure their soybean oil from other sources at this point. But in about, best estimate right now, about 18 months or so, the ADM plant will be fully operational and be able to supply that Marathon plant in western North Dakota. So it is one of those areas in this discussions we're having in this area that's causing a lot of excitement, a lot of optimism in potential for growth in that demand base.
Anything else before I let you go?
Obviously we got the WASDE report coming out, our first rough estimates of yields, yield adjustments. We're going to come off a trend line using some reported values from farmer surveys as well as some satellite imagery to try and estimate what the yield potential is going to be. Just reminding everybody, it's going to be something the market looks at, but we have to be cautious because at this time of year in August, it's pretty tough to really get a good handle on what corn and soybean yields are really going to look like. So it's going to be watched, but I wouldn't put too much weight or emphasis on it. I think obviously the September report is going to be the one that everybody focuses on. So keep your eyes and ears open. We've got a lot of volatility coming up. This is going to be another wild ride.
Thank you. That's, of course, Frayn Olson. He is with North Dakota State University and serves as an agricultural extension economist there. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks so much. Can you tell me about the rainfall we had over the weekend? Where did it fall and where didn't it?
Well, Todd, in the western Midwest, the weekend rains were a bit mixed, with some areas doing very well and other areas getting nothing. The areas that did well included southern Minnesota, portions of eastern South Dakota, and into northern Iowa. The areas that missed out included portions of eastern Nebraska, as well as much of central and southern Iowa down into northern Missouri. So the further north, The better rains further south, not as good. And then some of those better rains up north extended into Wisconsin and northern Illinois, where actually some flooding did take place as a result of the heavier rains there.
What do you see for the coming week?
Well, coming up here, we do see here these rains kind of coming to an end in the Western Belt, with the next opportunity for rains coming up over the upcoming weekend. Right now, it looks the opportunity looks okay, but still doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of widespread rains to produce more meaningful rainfall in those driest areas of central and southern Iowa, eastern Nebraska, and northern Missouri. So, but that's the next opportunity for rain. And then beyond that, then about 2 weeks out, another opportunity there, but still that kind of southwestern portion of the Midwest still looks to struggle here. As you go east of there, that's where rain opportunities look much better. And the eastern belt just continues to be in good shape from the Mississippi River, you know, eastward through Michigan and Ohio.
For a good portion of the season, we've been following hot and dry conditions in parts of Europe, especially in France. So what do they look like today?
Looks more of the same here, Todd, coming up for Europe. In other words, a general pattern that features hotter than normal and drier than normal conditions. In fact, from a temperature standpoint, another round of heat is going to be building into Western and Central Europe. Second half of this week and into the early part of next week. And some of that heat will actually be working its way into southeastern Europe next week as well. From a precip standpoint, the only thing that's a little bit different here in the pattern coming up is that there are some new rainfall prospects for areas of France and northern Italy coming up the early part of next week. Doesn't look like it's widespread or enough to eliminate the severe dryness, but it's better than nothing and probably help stabilize crops a bit. But it looks more also of a one-shot deal versus any kind of pattern change.
We're entering the heart of the hurricane season. Did I see that the western coast of Africa looks like it's about to produce some events that might tail our way eventually?
Yeah, the Atlantic Basin is starting to percolate here as, yeah, one wave of low pressure is, one tropical wave is coming off the coast of Africa. Conditions look marginal for development. There still is some enhanced dust that's come off of Africa within the main development region, and that along with some unfavorable upper level winds are going to limit development, but at least any kind of significant development. But we could have the fourth named storm of the season here, Tropical Storm Danielle, by the end of this week, but does not look like it's going to cause any or produce any threats to the U.S. or for that matter any land areas, as it looks to right now kind of stay out to sea or be of a very weak system.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. Just click and play from the website or search us out in your favorite podcast applications. Places like Apple, Google, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and so, so many more. Thanks for listening for the day. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is performed and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.